Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you very much, Kate, and I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect workshop, My Cancer Circle, a support network for caregivers. So today we're really highlighting the needs of caregivers. And today's program is a collaborative effort between Cancer Care and many other cancer organizations, and it really is because of that collaboration that we've been able to reach so many of you on the call today. Now, we have on the call today over 418 participants, and you come from all over the United States, and we also have international participants from Canada, Mexico, the Philippines, the United Kingdom, and Venezuela. So you really come from all over the world, and it's really a credit to each of you that you've chosen to spend the next hour with us for this program. This activity was made possible by Boehringer Ingelheim Pharmaceuticals, Inc. My Cancer Circle is a trademark of Boehringer Ingelheim Pharmaceuticals, Inc., so we really want to thank them for their support of this program and any other initiatives that we offer highlighting the needs of caregivers. Now, I'd like to turn your attention to the materials you received from Cancer Care, and in those materials is information about our speakers and the topics that will be covered, and there also is information about all the different collaborating organizations, and those are resources for you in addition to Cancer Care, where you can get free additional support as well. There also is an evaluation form, and I would ask you all to take a moment at the end of today's program and complete that evaluation form. You are the best people to tell us what you think of programs and also topics you'd like us to offer going forward. We are planning many programs actually going forward into the end of this year and next year, and so we very much appreciate your suggested topics for us as well. Now, we have wonderful speakers today, and I want to begin by introducing our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Laurel Northaus, and Dr. Northaus is the Mary Lou Willard French Professor of Nursing, University of Michigan School of Nursing, and Dr. Northaus is going to address the role of the caregiver and current stresses of family, friends, and loved ones. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to Dr. Northaus.
Well, good afternoon, Carolyn, and everybody on the call. It's very nice to be with you this afternoon. I'd like to start out by just defining who is a caregiver in terms of the role. Well, there's two types of caregivers, the formal caregiver, like nurses and social workers and so forth, and then the informal caregivers, such as family, friends, loved ones, and those are the people we're talking about today. So when we think of the word family caregiver, we broadly define the word to be anyone who provides emotional and or physical care to the person with cancer without pay. So family caregivers can be a blood relative, a friend, neighbor, member of your church or synagogue, whoever you call your family caregiver is that's the person. And I just want to start out by saying being a caregiver is extremely important. And as a nurse, I would like to thank all of you who are on this call today who are fulfilling that very valuable role. One thing we know is that caregivers seldom have time to put their own lives in order before they are asked to take on the primary caregiver role. And sometimes people don't even feel asked. They often are just the one who is identified as the only person available to be the caregiver. Well, some caregivers take on the role gradually, and others can be thrown into that role with little preparation or support. And for many caregivers, there's often an element of surprise. And as you think of your own situation today, as we're talking this afternoon, was it a gradual one, or were you sort of thrown into that role without ever expecting it? So just think about that. One of the challenges that many caregivers experience is that they seldom have the information they need to provide the care that is expected of them. There are some studies that suggest that 70% of caregivers want more information about the illness. For example, they often want information about how to manage symptoms or side effects, how to manage pain, and they often want information on how to deal with the emotional response they sometimes see in the person with cancer. You know, we're often very familiar with how to deal with a common cold or the flu, but when you get an illness like cancer, some people are just unsure about what is helpful or not helpful for that person. Many caregivers also want support. Although the caregivers are trying to provide support the best they can, some caregivers don't feel much support themselves coming back their way. And I think there are a number of stresses that I'm going to talk about in a minute to being a caregiver. So I think it's important for those of you who may be the one with cancer or other families and friends to try to also provide support to the caregiver. So what are some of the stresses that caregivers face? One stress is that caregivers often have difficulty or feel stress trying to balance the many day-to-day activities that are expected of them. Caregivers often take on some of the role of the survivor, such as their household responsibilities or childcare responsibilities, and they do that in addition to their own work responsibilities or other family responsibilities they may have. And so it's not uncommon for caregivers to feel like they're struggling to balance the many demands that they face. The second stress that caregivers experience is often not knowing how to help the person with cancer. Some caregivers actually feel powerless. They want to say and do the right thing. They want to be supportive, but they're not exactly sure what that is. And sometimes caregivers don't know if it's good to talk about worries and concerns. Maybe they think it's better for the person with cancer just to keep their hopes up and talk about only positive things. So anyhow, the idea here is it's stressful sometimes for caregivers to deal with some of the emotions that they see. And the third stress I'd just like to mention is uncertainty. Uncertainty or that not knowing what's going to happen next is pervasive during the cancer experience. And both survivors and caregivers often wonder if treatments are going to work, if the cancer might come back. And this leads to a lot of uncertainty in each person's life. And we all like to have some certainty. We like to know what's going to happen. But with chronic illness, that's not always possible. So we just have to learn to try to live on a day-to-day basis with uncertainty in our lives. So with that, I'm going to turn the conversation back down back to Dr. Messner.
Oh, thank you very much, Dr. Northhouse, for just an excellent overview and presentation, as always, very, very compassionate and substantive. Thank you. And our next speaker is Ms. Rosalie Canosa, and Ms. Canosa is Program Division Director for Cancer Care. And Ms. Canosa is going to present to you on My Cancer Circle, the support network, that the support tool that we've developed. And it's my pleasure now to turn this program over to Ms. Canosa.
Thank you very much, Dr. Messner, and good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to today's caregiver workshop. Dr. Northhouse's presentation really outlined for us the myriad of caregiver stressors that folks are faced with. And whether you're a person coping with cancer, a caregiver, or a healthcare professional, you know very well how overwhelming caring for someone with cancer can feel, and you understand that cancer really has a profound effect on family members, on friends, and others who are close to anyone diagnosed with cancer. Research clearly shows that the stress of caregiving can take such a serious toll on the emotional and physical health of caregivers. Caregivers really face so many competing demands, and high stress levels are very, very common. Any tools and any strategies we may have to help caregivers manage their stress will only help them feel better and help them to be better equipped to care for their loved ones. Oftentimes, we know that people, those in our support networks, really do want to help, but they don't always know what's needed. I'm going to take the next segment of this call to introduce you to MyCancerCircle.net. It's a free, customizable online tool that brings together friends, family, and volunteers to support families and caregivers of people with cancer. MyCancerCircle.net was created by Boehringer Ingelheim Pharmaceuticals in collaboration with Cancer Care, and it is powered by Lots of Helping Hands. It is a tool that coordinates volunteers helping caregivers take care of all of the tasks they face every day by providing a virtual calendar to help organize their community of helpers and by connecting members to direct resources provided by Cancer Care that can help those in their role as caregiver, and also by providing a private space for members to share updates and offer words of encouragement and support. My Cancer Circle is actually a service to support caregivers and to support people facing cancer. caregivers who are taking care of people with cancer have such extensive and varied responsibilities. My Cancer Circle is an online caring community that offers practical solutions to help organize a community of support for people struggling with multiple demands related to their cancer diagnosis, to cancer treatments, and to managing activities of daily living. In short, My Cancer Circle answers that very important question, what can I do to help? And as we know, there's always so much to be done. Sometimes the tasks may be practical in nature, such as cooking meals or helping with household chores, doing the laundry, walking the dog, managing insurance coverage, researching treatments, paying bills, or providing emotional support. Or, on the other hand, there may be childcare-related needs, like taking care of the family or picking up children from school. And still other tasks could be related to cancer treatment, such as transporting to medical appointments and treatments. I'm sure you can think of so many more tasks that need to be completed for anyone who is in active cancer treatment. Fortunately, it really only takes a few minutes to set up a community, and users have the option to allow one coordinator to oversee the community, or if they prefer, to identify several coordinators who are then assigned to manage specific tasks. For example, one coordinator might organize activities around medical appointments. Another might handle communication-related tasks, such as emails and updates. And while still another coordinator might be adept at locating resources and information, and that's what they may be tasked with. So I'm going to take you through a tour of My Cancer Circle to see just how these needs can be managed by a community of volunteers. Anyone actually can create My Cancer Circle community, but most often it is a caregiver or a close friend of the family. Sometimes the patient, him or herself, creates a community. What's important to know is that My Cancer Circle is easy for people to use and also to access. The calendar is color-coordinated. It clearly flags where there is a need, when and to what individual a task is assigned, and when a task or need has been met. It provides reminders to people who have committed tasks and links directly to cancer care services that we provide here, such as financial assistance, counseling, support groups, or education workshops, and you'll hear a little bit more about those. In this demonstration, I'll take you through the steps of creating a community, inviting members, listing activities, organizing those activities into groups, and posting to the message board. It's important to know that when someone creates a My Cancer Circle community, it is private and the information provided is only accessible by you and the members who are invited to join. A more detailed privacy statement can be found under the Get Started tab. It really only takes 4 short steps to create a My Cancer Circle community. These steps are, first, getting started, second, inviting members, third, creating groups, and fourth, adding activities. So to begin, on the next slide, if you click on the Get Started tab at the top of the page, after completing a few short questions that you'll be prompted to, you can create your community circle. Complete that form with information about you and your community. You can feel free to give your community any name you'd like. As you can see in this example, I've called this one Rosalie's Helping Hands. The purpose for My Cancer Circle communities is caregiving. So this is the option I've selected from the drop-down list, and that we'll select going forward. At the bottom of this page, towards the center, you'll see a Create My Community website tab. Once you click Create My Community website, you'll see a message asking you to check your inbox where you'll find a confirmation email from lotsofhelpinghands.com with a link to your new community, as well as some tips to help you get started. After you click the link in your email, you'll see the home page of your new community. This is where you'll find the help calendar. We'll learn how to build your community by inviting members, and then we'll view a help calendar with a few entries that volunteers can sign on to help with. To do that, we'll visit the next slide, which shows what you'll see when you click the Administration tab at the top of the page. I'm going to be referring to the Administration tab and to the contents on this page throughout this presentation, so I'd like for us to take a closer look at how it is organized and at some of the executive functions contained on this very important page. First of all, you'll notice that it's separated into three large columns. The first is the Members column. The middle column is the Help calendar, and the third is the Community column. The Members column is the location where you add members, you can create and manage groups, and you send welcome messages. You view other member activities from this column, and you also approved any pending members. Once you've invited members and created groups and activities, the option under the middle column titled Help Calendar will help you create, manage, review, and add activities. The third column, Community, is where you'll be able to send group emails and add announcements and build other components of your community, such as photo albums and journals, for example. You can think of the Administration tab as serving the executive function of your community. This is where members, activities, events, and updates are made, and you'll be visiting it often. We'll begin building our community by clicking on the Add Members option on this Administration tab, and on the next slide, we'll learn how to start building our community. On this slide, you'll see a table where you will enter the name and email address of everyone you want to add to your community. To the right of each email address, you'll see another column there that allows you to designate members to be on to be your community leader. That's a special designation. Community leaders have full access to everything within the community and can also appoint coordinators to help. If you find you need to add more members than what's currently shown, you can do so by clicking the green Add a Number Member link just outside of and below the table. Before we move on, though, I want to bring your attention to that the executive functions of the Administration tab I referred to earlier within the three main columns, Members, Help Calendar, and Community, those three main columns can actually also be found on the left-hand part of the screen and can be accessed easily from any of these pages. This really makes creating, updating, and communicating with members easy and seamless, whatever page you may be on. Once you've entered the names and email addresses for everyone you want to add, click Save and Continue. As the next slide shows, you'll receive confirmation that members were added. There will be a message reminding you that in order to complete the process, you'll need to send these members an email using a template that's provided. This message from you notifies members of their community membership with instructions on how to sign in to the community. All of the basic information your members will need to sign up will be taken care of. But in addition, you'll also have the ability to customize your message and to add a personal note. And I think you'll agree that this flexibility is a really convenient feature. So far on our four-step process, we've covered getting started and inviting members. Now that you have some members in your community, you may want to organize them into different groups. So on the next slide, we're going to talk about creating groups. To create groups, under the Members category on the left-hand Executive Functions section, you'll click on Add a Group. Then you'll give your group a name and a description. The group I've created here is in charge of meals. You can select the members that you'd like to be part of the group, then click Save Changes. You can go on to create another group if you'd like, or other possibilities. For example, other groups might be shopping, childcare, transportation, or meal preparation. This really is as individualist as you are, and it can be customized to meet your needs, whatever they may be. On the next slide, we'll learn how to add activities to your help calendar. To add activities, you'll need to answer four questions. What? when, where, and who. Turning once again to the left-hand columns or from the Administration tab under the Help Calendar, you go to the second choice and click Add an Activity. For the purpose of the next few slides, let's say we're creating a transportation group. Next, we'll want to indicate what type of activity it is. In this instance, it's giving rides. And we want to enter, give the activity a name, Ride to Appointment, as you see reflected here. A calendar label, Ride, and any notes about the activity that we may want to include. Here, we're really giving members an idea that the activity is expected to take about 2 hours. The entry we make in the calendar label field is what will actually be displayed on the large community calendar, so it's really best to keep this very brief. We've labeled this activity Ride, and that's exactly how it's going to appear on the calendar. Next, you'll click Continue, and on the next slide, you'll be prompted to set the activity time and date and to indicate the frequency of the activity. You can choose between never, weekly, or it can be customized to fit your needs. Once you've finished, click Continue. The next slide will ask you to provide information about where this activity takes place. As you can see in this example, I'm requesting help from my community members to provide transportation from my home to a medical appointment. After you've entered this information, you click Continue. The next slide takes us to the final step in this process, choosing an activity coordinator, if it's someone other than yourself. Activity coordinators will be notified when members sign up for this activity. If you'd like, you can also select several coordinators to be copied on this activity's emails. Then you'll want to let members know how long you expect the activity to take and how many volunteers you think you'll need. Once you've completed these entries, click Continue. Then you'll be offered a chance to edit any information you may like. Once you're ready, you click Create Activity, and this puts the activity on your calendar. On the next slide, you'll see an example of a confirmation message that will be received indicating the activity has been created, and you can send out an email about this activity to your members. There are 5 sub-tabs across the page I'd like to draw your attention to. They can be seen on the slide just below the yellow box confirming that an activity has been created. They are general info, new dates, changes, permissions, and view on calendar. Are you able to see those? If you click on the View on Calendar tab, which is all the way on the right-hand side, the next slide will show what your help calendar looks like and will reflect the activity, which will be listed on the calendar. The color-coded system indicates to you, to your coordinators, and your members which needs have been met or if help is still needed. The green fill indicates help is needed, while a blue fill indicates that needs have been met. The calendar view also offers a convenient snapshot look at the upcoming months, as you can see there. The next slide shows that you can click on the activity from the calendar and be taken to a detailed summary of that activity. On the right-hand side, you'll see 2 large buttons where you'll be able to sign up for this task or assign this task to another community member. On our next slide, the topic is the message board. The message board is a great place to connect and keep in touch with community members. To post to the message board, you go to the home screen, you click on Message Board. To start a new post, you'll click on the green Add a Post button on the right-hand side, enter a title, and type in your message. People use this to post words of encouragement and support, as well as provide updates and information you may want to share with your private community circle. You can post it to the board by clicking Save Changes, and then you'll see a confirmation that the message was posted. You can post announcements or well wishes. You can create a photo gallery in here, and you can also follow links to cancer care and other resources as well. Well, that takes you through the 4 steps of creating a MyCancerCircle.net community of support. If you have any questions along the way, click the Having Trouble tab for help. From there, you can browse help topics, you can contact a community coordinator, or send an email to the Lots of Helping Hands Member Support Center. Thanks very much for your attention this afternoon. The next time anyone asks what they can do to help, you'll have all of the information necessary to simply invite them to join your online community so that you can focus on what's important, caring for your loved one with cancer.
Oh, thank you so much, Rosalie. That was an excellent, really, presentation about the needs of caregivers, but also providing them with a tool to actually be able to really have all of their needs recognized by others so they could get help. So what a wonderful, very helpful to everybody on the call. Thank you so much. And our next speaker is Carly Mesovitz, and Carly is an oncology social worker at Cancer Care, and she's going to address an overview of Cancer Care's free psychosocial support services, as well as a review of our caregiver support groups. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to Ms. Mesovitz.
Thanks, Dr. Messmer, and hello and welcome to all those who are on today's call. As an oncology social worker here at Cancer Care, I'd like to talk about the services that Cancer Care can offer to help you as you navigate your role as a caregiver. Cancer Care is a national nonprofit organization that provides free professional support services to anyone affected by cancer. So that includes the person with cancer as well as their caregivers. Cancer Care programs, including individual counseling, face-to-face, telephone and online support groups, education about resources, workshops like this one, practical help, and some limited financial assistance are all provided by licensed master's-level oncology social workers and are all completely free of charge. Oncology social workers are trained in how a diagnosis of cancer affects a person and his or her family and friends. They're also trained to help people with cancer and their families tackle the problems that accompany the disease, like the financial demands, the physical changes, social adjustment, and psychological impact in care. Adjusting to and dealing with your loved one's diagnosis is really an important part of the healing process. Cancer affects the whole person and the entire family. So asking for help by joining a support group or by contacting a social worker for counseling is really a sign of strength. Joining a support group is a way to connect with others who are going through a similar situation or who have similar problems, and these connections help lessen the isolation that many caregivers experience. Support groups are a safe place where you can voice your concerns and your fears, or where you can share your successes. Feeling well emotionally can help you to better deal with your loved one's diagnosis and the treatment. Cancer Care currently offers support groups for caregivers in person in our offices in the New York and surrounding areas, as well as over the phone and online for anyone across the country or even internationally. If you're interested in any of Cancer Care services, don't hesitate to call our Hopeline toll-free at 1-800-813-4673 or visit our website at www.cancercare.org. So today's teleconference really shows that there's a lot of information to digest, but also shows that there are many resources out there to help you navigate your caregiver role. Cancer Care services are really there to help you. Our social workers can help you understand what this all means for you and your family, so please just reach out to us as needed. I thank you all for your attention and for the opportunity to talk with you today.
Oh, thank you so much, Carly, for really representing the services so well and that people have access to these free services. And now we have time for questions. We actually have a lot of time for questions, and I'm going to ask all of our speakers to come on board. And I'm also going to introduce another speaker who's going to be with us during the question and answer period, Dr. Stuart Fleischman. And Dr. Fleischman is founding director, Cancer Support Services, Continuum Cancer Centers of New York, Accreditation Surveyor, American College of Surgeons, Commission on Cancer. And we'll have all our speakers and Dr. Fleischman on board, and we have a lot of questions, so I'm going to ask Kate to explain to the audience how to queue up for questions, and we'll take as many of your questions as possible. If we don't get to your question, please call our 800 number at the end of the call, and our social work staff will be happy to answer your questions. Kate?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then 1 on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Those of you on the web may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question. And again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then 1 on your touch-tone telephone.
Well, thank you. And we have some questions from our online participants. And the first question we see here is that I'm not entirely comfortable with computers, and I'd like to set up a community, but worry that I'll do something wrong. Ms. Canosa, could you address that question, please?
Yeah, sure. I'm happy to answer that question. And I'm glad it's being asked because it's not unusual to have some, concerns about using the tool. And I want to just reassure everyone that Mike Cancer Circle was designed to be very user-friendly and easy to navigate, even for the novice. So what I would do is I'd just simply encourage you to visit the site to explore it. Click the Get Started tab, follow a couple of prompts that you'll be given, and really at that point you'll be well on your way to creating your community. And there's help every step of the way should you need it. If you have any questions, technical support is really available on every page. You'll see on the left-hand side a Having Trouble tab, and if you click that, you'll be connected right away to a series of help topics. You can browse those, or you can contact the community coordinator, or even send an email to Lots of Helping Hands Member Support Center. The support center can also be accessed and reached by writing to support@lotsofhelpinghands.com. I just encourage you to go ahead and explore it, and I think you'll soon come to find that it really is very user-friendly.
Well, thank you. And another question from one of our online participants is, My Cancer Circle sounds like it would be a great resource for me and my family, but my mother is a very private person and hates to impose on others. I'm interested in setting up a community, but we're concerned about privacy. Can you tell us how community members are selected? Ms. Canosa, could you address that one as well?
Okay. I think what we want to make sure that everyone understands about My Cancer Circle is that it is a private community, and it really is set up in such a way to ensure that it's accessible only to the people who have been invited to join and only to those who have been approved by designated community leaders and coordinators. The community leaders and coordinators are actually the only ones who can approve new members, and this really does ensure that only those you're comfortable with will actually receive an invitation to join your community.
Excellent. And another question from one of our online participants is, as a caregiver, how can I manage my own stress and depression while taking care of a loved one with cancer? What are practical hands-on ideas to make caregiving easier? Dr. Fleischman, could you start with that one?
Sure. It's a hard job, as we heard. It's a job that often people aren't anticipating or don't have a mentor for, and many people feel they have to wing it and do it on their own. So that's sort of a given. It's not easy. In my experience with many patients and families, I've seen that a tool like this can help with a lot of the practical things so that the stress is actually somewhat removed, although it may seem a little stressful to some people to set all this up. It actually takes a burden off in an ongoing way over the course of weeks or of months of treatment. So it can be a burden, but it can be a big help. It's hard to reach out to people, and this is a way to do it in a routine, matter-of-fact manner.
Awesome. Thank you. And we have a question from one of our online participants as well. Any advice for someone who is an RN as well as a caregiver? My husband has a new diagnosis of cancer. I'm having problems trying to separate my nurse role from my spouse role. Any support groups designed for us? So I'm going to ask Dr. Northhouse to address that initially, and then I may have others, actually, if you want to add to it as well. But Dr. Northhouse, could you address that? Because clearly healthcare professionals often do have those issues. And
yes. Yes, I think that's a very good question. And sometimes health professionals think that they might be invincible to the stress because we have the information, but actually sometimes it's even harder because we can read into this symptom or that symptom and start to worry about that, knowing it might be something else. So I think it's very difficult for us to try to separate our personal role as a family member from our professional role. probably the most helpful thing is to try to focus on what your goals are as a caregiver to support your loved one, but also to take care of your own self as a caregiver, to try to stay healthy, find some time. I'm sure if you are still working as an RN, you're very busy providing care in your particular healthcare setting, so you may have an overload at work as well as many demands at home. But the extent to which you can try to separate yourself and kind of put a boundary between who you are as a nurse and who you are as a family member. Although the other thing you could do is try to realize that maybe it is an asset. You do have information that you've learned over time. You know, many caregivers say they just are lacking information so much, so in a sense it's an asset you have it, but I think it's just something you need to guard against to be sure you are trying to be in your role as a family caregiver.
Excellent. And would anyone else like to add anything? That's an excellent answer. That's it. It's certainly challenging for many healthcare professionals. It sounds like a program in and of itself, so thank you for that excellent question. Another question that we have what advice can you provide to a parent caregiving for young adults with cancer? I'm going to ask Ms. Mefovitz if you could address that question.
Sure. So for a parent who is the caregiver of a young adult with cancer, I think it's important to recognize that young adults have a very different set of needs emotionally, practically, and so keep that in mind. I think being available for them, offering support emotionally, asking them how you can be helpful is usually helpful for the young adult who is dealing with a cancer diagnosis.
Thank you. And another question from one of our online participants, what tips can you provide to avoid burnout with my responsibilities as a caregiver? Ms. Kenosa, can you address that question?
It's so important, really, to be attuned to the issue of burnout, I think. But the very fact that anyone is thinking ahead and anticipating what can be done is really, I think, a big step in the right direction. Finding support, sharing your experiences with others that you can trust can really make the stress of caregiving much more manageable. Now, this confidant might be a friend, it might be a partner, a spouse, a sibling, a clergy person, could be a social worker. It really could be anyone that you feel comfortable talking to. In addition to, you know, the being attentive to one's emotional health, it's also really important to be attentive to physical health, because neglect of any aspects of life really can contribute to burnout. So eating healthy, balanced meals, staying well hydrated, maintaining a good physical activity, eating, getting enough sleep, they're all very important. And it really is very well documented in the literature that caregivers often neglect their own health needs. And it really is so important that caregivers take time to take care of yourselves as well, and of ourselves. You can explore, for example, the support groups that Carly talked about earlier. Support groups might be available in your immediate area, or you might want to visit cancercare.org and take a look at the list of online support groups that we have to offer. These forums can help provide a safe space to help meet and to learn from others who are coping with similar experiences, and we know that this really can be so helpful to avoid burnout.
Thank you. That's such an important question. Many people begin to feel that way, so these are excellent tips. I have another question along those lines from one of our online participants. Family members nearby don't offer any help caring for my mother, who was recently diagnosed with cancer, especially during the holidays. Some days seem overwhelming with caregiving duties and frustrating with lack of help from other family members. I'm already starting to stress about Thanksgiving. What can I do? Dr. Fleischman, do you want to address that?
Our holidays are hard for everybody. Many of us have somewhat unrealistic expectations of what the holidays will be like beforehand. And being in the middle of cancer treatment or having someone in the family in the midst of treatment only complicates the matters. I think you need to be realistic about what you expect and not try to make it perfect, because it's hard to do that in any circumstance, especially when caring for someone with cancer. The other thing, again, is to reach out for help and ask other people maybe to help with the meal or to help with the arrangements. If everybody who's coming contributes just one thing, then that's many less things that you need to make and worry about and shop for in advance and cook. And I think sometimes freeing up some energy with practical matters can actually give the caregiver a few minutes just to sit back and be with themselves and think things through and just acknowledge that it's hard to be in a holiday season when someone in the family is ill, but it's possible.
Excellent. Thank you. And Ms. Knosa, do you want to comment on that also in terms of the My Cancer Circle? Because it sounds like that might be a time when one might be able to identify things that one might need help with in terms of shopping or various things that one could ask others to do.
Yes, indeed. I think that's true. It's a great form and tool to use to help assign certain tasks related to pulling together a big holiday meal, or you can easily ascribe and assign certain responsibilities. Who's going to cook what aspects and bring what parts of the meal? Or if someone needs help with transportation, getting to to where the main event is going to be. So it's a great example of how My Cancer Circle can be used in that instance.
And another question from one of our online participants, Dr. Northouse. I feel like I made many mistakes as my mother's caregiver. I blame myself many times for letting things be overlooked. How can I cope with this blame and prevent myself making mistakes?
Well, that feeling that it's not uncommon for caregivers to believe that they could always do something better. Providing care is a very difficult task at times, especially if your loved one is very ill. And my guess is you probably did the best you could with the resources you have to provide care to your mother. I think the blame, if it's something that that's something you might need to talk with somebody else about, another objective person to help you sort that through, and maybe that would maybe be even somebody here at Cancer Care to call back and sort of talk about that a little bit longer. But I also just want to say that many caregivers, because they feel overwhelmed, and I often think about it as a nurse, if we often expect caregivers in the community to provide the kind of care as if they had had 4 years of education as a nurse, and caregivers haven't. And so maybe our expectations as caregivers as professionals are somewhat unrealistic for caregivers in the community. And so because you think you need to give such high-level care with such little support and information, it's probably not uncommon to be feel overwhelmed and feel like you made a mistake. But, the blame is hard, and it's something that you just may need some help to work through that one. At some point in time.
Ms. Smith, do you want to comment on that as well, in terms of our the support groups here and the counseling services that we provide, in terms
Absolutely.
Of people feeling that way?
Yeah, so many caregivers put a lot of pressure on themselves to have all the right answers and to do all the right things along the way. But the reality is that there's no handbook, there's no right way to do things in terms of being a caregiver, and it's really on-the-job training. But somebody's feelings of inadequacy or feeling like they didn't do enough or made some mistakes are normal, and I think connecting with other people who have gone through that, who've experienced what it's like to feel like they might have wish they could have done something differently can be really comforting. It can normalize their experience, but it can also expose them to people who have worked through some of that and can then begin to see some of the gains, some of the good things that they did do along the course of the caregiving.
And then we have another question from one of our online participants in terms of what advice that can be given to cope with emotions when in remission as a caregiver. And we see that often in a survivorship community in terms of how to cope when perhaps some of the caregiving role has changed a bit in changing roles. And Dr. Northhouse, could you address that? And I'm going to ask each of our speakers to address that.
Yes, if I understand it was the question about how does the caregiver cope with sort of that period of time when things are maybe calm and the person's in remission. Is that more or less the question you were asking?
Yes.
And, you know, I think it's a difficult time because sometimes when a person's receiving active treatment, caregivers are busy, they know what their role is, but during the time of remission, caregivers are kind of wondering how to help and what can I do. And I think this is a time to try to realize that you're in hopefully a steady state. And I think one worry that caregivers often have during remission is that the cancer might come back and they're just waiting for the shoe to drop, and that's a very unsettling feeling. So even though, and they don't want to have that feeling or thought because they're very glad that things are going well, but that's not an uncommon feeling. So if those of you out there may be worried about that and think that's really not great that you're worrying about it, I would just say I would accept that in yourself. It's part of the uncertainty that goes with the cancer experience. And maybe during remission, this is a time for you as a caregiver to try to focus on doing some things for yourself, trying to get back at maybe some exercise or walking outdoors to strengthen yourself, try to concentrate on eating healthy for you and your loved ones. So try to think of some of those positive things that you can do to promote your health and your family members' health while you're in a period of remission, the person is.
Excellent. Dr. Fleischman, do you want to add anything to that?
Sure. It's a great question because when an imaging study or lab tests signal that there's a remission, it doesn't start for the individual patient all at once. Many of the lingering effects of cancer treatment linger long after that day or that week, and it can take weeks or months for each of the different toxicities or the side effects of treatment to actually correct. Some may not correct altogether, but some take quite a bit of time. Getting help from the people in your cancer treatment team just to know what to anticipate is important because it's unrealistic for someone to just wake up one morning and feel like themselves before. None of us do, and each of the side effects really takes its own time. Some will be faster, some will be slower. So really understanding what the natural progression of the healing process is a good thing, again, to know what to expect. For example, if someone has nerve ending burning or pins and needles in their hands and feet or nerve endings as a result of chemotherapy, that can take a while to go away. It may go away and then come back a little bit and then go away some more. So just being knowledgeable about what to expect can be very helpful.
And Ms. Knossa, do you want to add anything?
Yeah, I think the sort of the enduring nature of survivorship has its upside and its downside, and I think it is often it does bring to the surface for caregivers this period of uncertainty and unease. As was mentioned earlier, there's that concern for, you know, are we okay now? How long are we going to be okay? And when might the next shoe drop again? I think assuming that it's a relatively smooth transition into survivorship, I think it's important to recognize those, you know, concerns and anxieties and address them, deal with them, but try as best you can not to let them interfere with taking over your life. You can use this, this period to regain some of the normalcy that was lost during the active period of treatment, and just know that it's not at all uncommon to have these feelings, but acknowledging them and recognizing them and dealing with them really will help to restore a sense of normalcy and balance into your family life.
Excellent. And Carly, Ms. Bessett, do you want to comment just in terms of for parents with young adults who are in remission and the transition roles that they may experience in terms of, perhaps when someone was more ill in the midst of treatment and now is moving into a survivorship experience? This is of course, something that one experiences across the lifespan, but particularly with young adults. Do you want to comment on that as well?
Yes. So for young adults, it's important for both the patient and the parent to realize that cancer isn't over just because treatment ends, and that there are often chronic issues, lingering side effects that do continue. And I think for the parent, realizing that they may not have all the answers is important because, A, it'll give them a break from kind of putting all the pressure on themselves to have the right answer to be able to support their child. But for the young adult, knowing that there are many survivorship support groups, counseling services out there, because transitioning out of treatment for young adults can be an especially difficult time, because there's not the there's not as much focus on the medical team. There's not as many interactions with the doctors. And so there is this level of uncertainty that comes up. So I think for the young adult to connect with support, the transition into survivorship is a really important time to have that support in place.
Thank you. Important question. Thank you. These are really excellent questions. And our next question is really having to do with long-distance caregiving, which we've addressed in part before. But Ms. Messovitz, I wondered if you could address this again regarding a family member who lives in another state, and how can I help and when I'm really not physically there, when I'm so far away. So,
sure.
Ms. Messovitz, if you could address that question, which I know we deal with a great deal at Cancer Care as a national organization, providing service to people who live all over the country and are providing help to people in different regions.
Yes, it's common for long-distance caregivers to feel like they don't know where they fit in. They're not there on the day-to-day going to doctor's appointments and being able to physically help, and that can be really isolating in itself. But there are a lot of ways that the long-distance caregiver can be supportive. Offering emotional support is something that is so important for the patient or person with cancer, and that's something that somebody can do via text message, via Skype, via email. So even from hundreds of miles away, a caregiver can be really involved in the process. They can also deal with contacting doctors, setting up appointments, researching resources, and all of those things can make the patient's life a little bit easier and can also create a meaningful caregiver experience even from a long distance.
Excellent. And would others like to add anything to that? Because that's a big issue. I think we all are dealing with it as we become a society where people often live further and further away from their families of origin or their family members. Dr. Fleischman?
Sure. I mean, it's a tough thing to do close by. There are different sets of challenges far away. Having people close to the individual patient is really important, people that you can count on. Sometimes those are paid people. Sometimes those are family members or volunteers from the area. There are a number of ways to cobble together a good team. But it's really important to have someone on the scene who can be called in an emergency or who can be counted on to be present. With the modern electronics today, it's so much easier to have a visit via Skype, although telephone, as we know from these conferences, is very helpful. Having a video and seeing somebody adds an extra dimension that can really help with long-distance caregiving and can complement what the people on the scene can do.
Excellent. And Dr. Northhaus, do you want to add anything to this?
Well, I was listening to the comments being made, and I certainly agree with all of them. And I'm thinking that even if it's a neighbor or somebody who's maybe not always immediately involved, but as Dr. Fleischman said, somebody that you could count on being on scene is, I think, just very reassuring to the distant caregiver. And if the distant caregiver is in town at some point, if they could make a special point to go visit the physician with the patient or with the survivor to get an update on a face-to-face basis, when they're in town, maybe try to schedule something so that they always they feel like they're more a part of it when they are in town.
That's an excellent point. Thank you. And Ms. Knosa, do you want to add anything?
Yeah, all extra excellent tips. I think in addition, in order to sort of feel integrated into the role as caregiver, as a distant caregiver, to maximize actual in-person visits whenever they do occur, be really helpful to connect with members of other members of the informal support community, be it a neighbor or clergy person. Stay connected with that circle, and through emails or through a tool such as My Cancer Circle, it's really another way to do that, and also to keep the circus open so that you feel you can feel invested and involved, and you can, you know, reach out to members who are closer geographically and physically to your loved one. There's still a very, very important role to play.
And that's very true. That actually long-distance caregivers are very important. They often have very significant relationships with the person who has cancer, and they really, there's so many of these tips that have been given, so many ways to be present when you physically aren't there, using all the other methods that we have to really let someone know that we're really there for them. That's so important. And another question for Ms. Knosa, actually, in terms of, particularly with the holidays coming up, they would like to set up a join a community to help, but I worry that I might agree to a certain activity but forget that I've done so. Do members get reminders about tasks they have committed to do? Ms. Knosa, could you address that?
I can totally understand that kind of concern because everybody's so busy these days. In fact, there is a reminder system that's built into the My Cancer Circle. Reminders are sent to folks who volunteer for activities at very regular intervals. They're sent out 1 month, 1 week, and 1 day before the actual scheduled tasks. So you should find that helpful.
And, you know, we are entering into this kind of very busy time of year. Everything is sort of, you know, it's the fall, and so that it just seems that people often are much busier at this time of year. And so I wonder if all of our speakers could address that component for the caregiver, just kind of things start up again at work, if they have children going to school, if just to kind of, you know, the holidays are coming up, just kind of this whole gearing up that starts to happen now, and how it is for the caregiver who really is involved in taking care of someone. So Dr. Northhouse, could you begin?
Yes, I agree it's a very difficult period of time to be a caregiver for someone, yet doing all the other expectations people have as the holidays approach. I think it's important to try not to take on a lot of extra activities. You know, they may be looking for someone to help out with this event, that special event. And if you're already providing care as well as trying to live your life with your usual tasks, I would say try to hold back a bit on getting caught up in a lot of extra activities that may not be a priority for you right now. I also think, speaking of priority, it's really important to think about what your priorities are. And maybe it is to be able to get to a family gathering rather than some other type of gathering where you don't feel quite as connected with people. I would try to really make a list of what your priorities are and focus on using your energy toward that. But I think another thing that sometimes can happen during the holidays is people feel consumed by the illness, and they don't want to do anything. They don't want to go out. And I would also caution against that, because the extent to which you can try to get out to a few things so you don't feel that the illness is consuming either you or your family, loved one. But, again, pick and choose something that won't use all your energy, but you'll still be able to get out and enjoy some of the holiday season.
Oh, excellent tips. Thank you. And Dr. Fleischman?
Sure. I've seen families go through this in a very different way. Some families want to make it the best holiday ever because they're worried that it's their relative's last one. And again, the pressure is extraordinarily high when you try to do that. But some people really enjoy doing the best holiday ever before, though they are really tired afterwards. I've seen some families who just choose as a group to forego the holidays and just make it a regular day and avoid a lot of the additional stress. So I think just having a consensus, especially what the individual patient has in mind, is a good way to start. And sometimes people take an exemption from the holidays.
Oh, thank you. That's interesting. Thank you so much. That's excellent. And Ms. Knosa?
I'd like to say that I think that really there is no one-size-fits-all when it comes to this, and what's really important is that you come to a decision that works best for you and for your loved ones. I think it's hard but really important to try to keep out the outside influences. There are so many other pressures and challenges and stressors. We don't need any more. So just be kind to yourself and give yourself the permission to do what you think is right for yourself.
That's so important. Thank you. That's really good. Thank you. And Ms. Nesbitt?
You know, the holidays and this fall season really kick things into high gear, and it's a really busy time for so many people. And so downtime can be hard to find, so I think it's important for caregivers and patients alike to really maximize those down moments that do come, you know, whether it's taking an extra long shower or going for a walk when you can, or, you know, listening to your favorite song on the way to work. Those things, those moments where somebody can just kind of slow down and refresh themselves can be really powerful, especially in a time where there's a lot of busyness and a lot of things going on, like during the holidays.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you. And these are wonderful tips, and I really want to thank all of our speakers. You've just been extraordinary. I want to thank all of you who've asked such excellent questions online. I want to remind all of you this is a one-hour program, and that in planning a program like this, we know that you have many needs that go far beyond the scope of 1 hour. So please do call our oncology social workers here at Cancer Care. We're here to help you, and please do contact us at 1-800-813-HOPE. And really take advantage of all the free services we offer. Most importantly, as we conclude the program today, we don't want anyone to think that you're alone in coping with cancer and coping as a caregiver. We want you to know that you're now a part of this community of support, and we really are here to help you. And we want you very much to take advantage of all of our services here, really at Cancer Care, and to really benefit from them. So I want to thank you all for participating today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may disconnect. Have a wonderful day.